The recordings have been started.
Thank you very much, Jay. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the NCSG Elections Meet the Candidate conference call on Friday, 28th of August 2015. On the call today, we have Rafik Damak, Marilia Marcel, Pascal Bekono, Anthony Mix, James Gannon, Fazani Badi, Amr Elsada, Anthony Mweke, Stephanie Perrin, Peter Green, Tapani Tarvanin, Klaus Toll, Bill Drake, and from staff myself, Mariam Bakoshi. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you ever so much. Over to you, Rafik.
Thanks, Mariam. Thanks for everyone for joining today. So this is kind of experiment for us for election to have such control where we can really ask a question to the candidates to know more about them. We had before this maybe for election for the board members, but this first time really for NCSG election, and we hope we keep doing that in future. So basically what we are trying to do first to give the chance to candidates to make maybe a short statement up to 2 or 3 minutes. So they share the statement and the list, but this is more to maybe to highlight the more important point. And then we will try to get more questions and ask them. So it's really to give a chance for you all to make a question and asking for clarification to candidates. So first we will start with the candidate for the chair position, and we are going to follow the alphabetical order, and then we start with James. So James, please make your statement. You have 2 minutes or three if you want for this. So please go ahead.
Excellent. Thanks, Rafik. So for those of you who don't know me, James Gannon is my name. I'm from Ireland. So by way of background, I started off my career as a network engineer focused in the media production sector. After working with that for a while, I moved across to a number of security and privacy roles in the healthcare and biotech markets, primarily working on security policy issues. Through that, I gained extensive policy development experience working with the FDA and working with industry groups in that area. During my time there, we obviously had interactions with ICANN, and I started following the business of ICANN for a number of years through that. About approximately 2 years ago, I left to join a small security and privacy policy consultancy based out of Dublin. And during my time there, I started working on the IANA transition with a focus on security and privacy issues throughout the process. At the start of my interactions with policy development in ICANN, I was looking for a home, and I decided that NCSG was by far the best place for me. I'm very passionate about doing policy development, and I believe that it's a place where normal people like you and me can have a genuine impact on how the internet is run, and I think that's an incredibly important thing that we all should be very proud of, and I think it's a huge amount of work for everybody, and the fact that we're all volunteers, I think, speaks to the level of commitment that people in NCSG have. For what I would do if I was elected by the members to be chair, I think I would try to be a facilitator. I would look to allow the members to do their work in an effective manner. I wouldn't be a dictator. I would like to keep the bottom-up process at the heart of everything that we do in NCSG. I would like to make sure that we have efficient processes and efficient ways to ensure that the policy that NCSG members want to get across and it's spoken loudly and strongly within the GNSO. For the administration side, I've spent the guts of the last 12 years working as a project and a program manager. Across both non-commercial issues around, I work a lot with NGOs and charities, and I also have a lot of commercial experience in managing diverse teams to common goals. So I think in the role of chair that I would be an effective facilitator and a cooperative leader for the NCSG.
Thanks, James. Thanks for this. So hopefully we'll get more questions in the Adobe Connect, and then we'll copy in the whiteboard and Adobe there. Now we can move to Tapani. Tapani, you here?
Hello. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Mike Votu. So I'm Tapani Tarvainen from Finland, and I've been too busy to even prepare a statement, so I'm just talking out of my head. A little background history. I've been working at various IT-related jobs, mostly in universities, since forever, mainly. Around 1998, I went to Saudi Arabia to work for Lucent Technologies and Saudi Telecom, which was an interesting experience. I was a nominally a consultant, but leading and trading system administrators and so forth. And after returning in 2000 to Finland, I went back to Jyväskylä University, where a new faculty had been founded, the IT faculty, and I was tasked to set up a team, building an IT support team, and basically because the university IT support was not exactly up to our need then. And I was fairly successful, I think, but after some point the university decided to just collect all various IT teams from the university and put them together, and basically took over my team and the practices we built and applied them to the university-wide. But my job was kind of left over for the faculty, and I became sort of an oddball expert, special circumstances support, and it's been increasingly on not only on technical but legal aspects. Because that comes from my civil society interest, been always interested in human rights, and also immediately after returning from Saudi in 2000, soon after I found Electronic Frontier Finland, which had been just founded, wound up in the board pretty quickly, and as a vice president and then as a president, and doing all kinds of possible things there. For those who don't know, Electronic Frontier Finland is an independent organization, nothing formally affiliated with the Ethnic Frontier Foundation, but doing similar things in Finland, except we don't have any money, or very little. So it was some volunteer-based work. I wound up doing all kinds of things, building member databases and writing opinion pieces on legal aspects and so forth. And I was involved in ICANN mostly after WISIS in Tunis, 2005.
Hello?
There's some background noise. Anyway, after WISIS, I guess, got involved in IGF. I've been in every IGF since, in all kinds of roles there. And in 2009, I think, I joined NCUC. I've been not very active for the most part, but in 2012-13, I was in the NCUC EC. And then mostly from some private personal issues, I had to drop out in other time to be more active. I've not been very active in the working groups or anything like that, but I don't see that as the chair's role. It's more of an administrative task, and I have, I think, been a good bureaucrat, so to speak, administering all kinds of civil society organizations, not only EFI, but some other small ones as well, and also doing similar stuff at university level. So I think I would be reasonably useful for NCSG SN as the chair running the EC and bureaucracy underneath the administrative staff effectively, to let the people doing the policy work do their work efficiently. I guess that's enough for the start.
Thanks, Stefani. Thanks for this statement. I think we are starting to get a question, but Anytime we will go to the GNS Seoul Council candidates first, to give them the chance to make their own statement, and then we will, after that, we will start with the round of questions. So let's start first with Amr Sad. Amr, are you ready?
Yeah, thanks, Rafiq. This is Amr. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, yeah, we can hear you.
Can anyone? Yeah. All right, great.
Yeah.
Okay, well, apart from what I've submitted on my statement on list, I'm not sure what more I could really add. I am from a bit of an odd sort of background in terms of normal participants in ICANN, I think, because I am from a healthcare background. But as stated in my candidate statement, I have been working in telemedicine and e-health solutions for almost about 10 years now, and I've been doing some graduate studies in that field the past few years in Norway. I am back in Egypt now. My work has mostly been regarding information systems and electronic patient records for patients and sort of connecting different hospitals with each other to sort of share specialist expertise without the need for travel of whether they're patients or actual just medical consultants. And I sort of got into local internet policies here when they affected my work, and through that I also started to become involved with a few civil society groups here in Egypt. As mentioned in my statement, I helped establish an NGO that has actual representatives of different stakeholder groups, and this was something very new here. And about a year after doing this, which was in around 2012, maybe this NGO was set up as the Egyptian chapter of the Internet Society. I've been involved in ICANN for a few years now. I originally started attending meetings as a fellowship program participant. So I'm an alumni of the fellowship program. And I went to the ICANN meeting in Seoul in 2009 with the fellowship program, one in Nairobi in 2010, and San Francisco in 2011. I think my San Francisco meeting was the first meeting I attended as a member of the NCSG and NCUC. And that's the first time I got to meet a bunch of you folks out there. I think since then I've been relatively well engaged in the work of the NCUC and NCSG. I've been a regular participant in GNSO working groups. I've drafted a bunch of statements on behalf of the NCSG and tried to, managed to get quite a few of those endorsed by the non-commercial stakeholder group. I'm kind of proud of the work I've done for NCSG, and I hope that members feel that way about me as well. I think I'll stop here and hopefully get more questions just to kind of get a feel for what I may have left out, my personal information, what people would like to know about me. So I'll pass it back to you, Rafiq. Thanks.
Thanks, Amma. Thanks for this. Now we go with Marilia. And then we'll end up with the statement. Marilia?
Thank you very much, Rafiq. This is Marilia Marcel speaking. I am an academic. My background is in law and international relations. I am a coordinator and researcher at the Center for Technology and Society in SGV in Brazil. I am involved with internet governance for quite a few years. I started in internet governance forum in Brazil in 2007. Since then, I have participated in CSGD meetings. I have been part of the working group on IGF improvements created in CSGD. I've been following ITU, the WISIS protest. So in spite of the fact that my involvement with ICANN is more recent, I have been working with internet governance for a long time. And I started to be involved in ICANN because of interest that I have been an intellectual property professor for some time in FGV, of working with domain indexed resolution. So that's what attracted me at first, and I entered through the fellowship program. And I think this is an amazing way of getting involved, as someone commented on the list, and I try to stay involved with the fellowship program, talking about possibilities for newcomers to become more involved in ICANN. So after the fellowship program, I of course I was already part of MTEC through CTS membership, and I started to become more involved with the policy committee. Spent some months there, and then I started to work at the GNSO, and I've been in the GNSO for a year. To me, the two priorities that I have had while at the GNSO have been two key topics that one of them has kind of gained traction in recent times, which is human rights. Right? For me, it was kind of a surprise when I got involved in ICANN for the first time, how many issues have an interplay with human rights. And I have been working with the cross-community working party on human rights with other people here. I have been helping to draft the charter or the document that kind of guides the working party. I have been trying to raise this issue, and I'm waiting for the moment in which the GNSO will tackle how we're going to incorporate the ideas that have been raised by the working party on the need for a human rights impact assessment when we are in the process of developing policies. And I think at this moment it's coming soon because of the maturity that the topic has gained in recent times. Another topic that has caught my attention while being in the council is the issue of development, and this is this has a clear interface with the new DTLD process and the next round. I know that in a little time we start to discuss the next round. We are assessing the former round from 2012. I had the chance to raise in the council quite a few times the importance of taking into account issues such as the recommendations made in the JAS report and to make sure that the next round are more consistent with the needs from the developing regions to develop the DNS industry there too. So for me, this in my first year in the council, this has been two topics of key interest. I think I will continue to be involved in this topic if I am elected again. In the first year, as I mentioned in my statement, I took great advantage of the experience of other people that have been in the council for more time or that have been involved in ICANN for more time. And the issues that I did not have clarity, I always consulted with them and tried to understand before I made my mind and before I voted to council. So for me, it was a moment and a year of learning experience as well and understanding what are the different issues, and I plan to broaden my scope of interest if I am elected to the council again. And one of the things that concern me a lot is how ICANN and the policies discussed in ICANN are not very known and discussed in developing regions of the world. As I mentioned in my statement, it was one of my commitments to make sure that this debate is at least more unknown and the people have awareness about this. So I have tried to, in different occasions, raise awareness of topics being discussed in ICANN. And I'm doing this in an upcoming event, for instance, that we're going to organize in Brazil together with the stakeholder engagement for Brazil. So this would be one of my concerns too. And coming from a developing region, I would try to reach out more specifically to Latin America too. Well, that's it for now. I think that if we can receive questions, then we can debate more. Thank you, Rafi.
Okay, thanks, Marilia. And I see we are getting several questions now. So we will start with, I think, so the first question I have for the chairs. Chair candidate. So the first question is from Amma, and it's about the role of the NCG chair to serve in the NCG policy committee. So, okay, maybe now we can change the order. We start with Stefani first.
Okay, this is Stefani speaking. As I see it, the role of the chair in the policy committee would be more of a coordinating role than leading the policy as itself. I would rather work with close collaboration with councillors And in that manner, actually, I would like to ask a question to our counselors, because one of the things that the chair would have to know is who knows what, who are our experts in this various issues. So I'd like to have a question to both counselor candidates. What are your strengths, and what kind of issues should the chair call upon you? But otherwise, I would not be a strong policy-making chair, but coordinating, organizing one. And yeah, I think that's it. Let James talk longer.
Okay. Thanks, Tapani. James.
Thanks, Rafiq. So, as to the role of the chair, I think that I would see myself as somebody who would want to bring a greater level of structure to the policy committee. And I know that that's something that Rafiq has already begun to work on himself recently and over the last year or so. So I'd like to implement some tools and processes that would allow us to have a policy committee that functions at an even higher level than we already do. I think we have a policy committee that it puts in a Herculean effort on the amount of public comment periods and issues that we respond to already, but I would like to try and push that to an even higher level. So I would like to put in a proposal for the PC to produce policy papers that reflect NCSG's position on critical issues, because I've noticed that, and this possibly goes slightly to one of the other questions, is that when we have newcomers come in, it can be very hard for them to get up to speed on NCSG's position on issues within ICON. So I'd like to see a set of policy papers produced that would allow our newcomers and also outside observers to see where NCSG stands on issues that may not even be out to public comment periods yet. So I suppose I would like to put in processes that allow the policy committee as the policy voice of the members to function in a more broad manner. And in order for that to happen, because of workload issues, I think we would need to have a bit more tools and some more processes around that to allow the policy committee to take on that additional workload.
Okay, thanks, guys. I'm tempted to intervene here, but I should not. Okay, so let's go to the next question. And this is going more about the administrative part, and it's what you propose as improvement. So I'm trying like here to do kind of going around. So let's start with James, and then we go to Tapani.
So for administrative improvements, I suppose it would be similar to what I've just said for the policy committee. Around the NCSG in general, we have a huge amount of workload, and we need to improve and build on the processes that we have to manage that workload. So the volunteer burnout is a serious issue for everybody in NCSG, and I've seen that since I've joined myself as a relative newcomer. It's very easy to get burnt out very quickly with the amount of workload that is going on around ICANN. So I would like to put in a set of processes similar, I suppose, to a project manager, which is where I come from. I'd like to put in project management around the workload that NCSG has. I'd like to put in tools that allow us to track and to recognize where our issues are on that. And I think as a result of that, we would also be able to then engage with ICANN staff to address the issue of civil society engagement in ICANN at a higher level. And we can then go and say, look, we know that there is volunteer burnout issues. Here is our, you know, data that shows that. And then we will be able to move forward with that and genuinely address the issue of burnout. Because at an administrative level, we talk about burnout a lot, and ICANN staff talk about burnout a lot, but we haven't actually sat down and tried to do anything about it yet. So I'd put in a lot more stringent processes, and I would allow our committees and our members to have a stronger voice by having a stronger way for them to express that.
Okay, thanks, James. And please, for those who are not speaking, mute yourself. Okay, let's go to Tapani now.
Okay, thank you, Rafi. Tapani again. I very much agree with James about the burnout danger. After running 5 years as EFFI chair and president, I felt that pretty keenly, and that we did build various systems to automate things, to keep people aware of managing things automatically that should not take personal time when they are done properly. One thing I see a problem in NCSG is that we have overlapping work, for example, between the stakeholder group and the constituencies, most obvious being the membership management, which has been something of a sore thumb, I think, to some, that we don't have actually maintaining three distinct member databases, that we really should only have one. And it has led to situations where we're not quite sure who's member of where, and may even be losing some members from the voter list because we are not quite sure who's doing being a member and so forth. One thing I would definitely want to do is to build a good member database that provides a good service to both constituencies and the stakeholder group level to avoid these kind of issues in the future. I also would definitely want to set up some kind of project management system, again, some kind of automated mechanism that is easy to follow, to see deadlines for various things, automated alerts to people who subscribe to them, that to know what's going on, to build up things that make it easy for members to find out what's going on. When I joined NCUC and even in the EC, trying to track what's going on has been really difficult at times. We don't have any easy, centralized place to look for when you want to find what's going on, who's doing what. And especially for newcomers, this can be a serious hurdle when they don't know where is that, what. Even trivial things, where is the mailing list archive? Okay, you can find it, but it's not something obvious. We have mailing lists that float all over the place, somehow hosted by Syracuse University and some by some other organizations or whatever, which is fine. It's nice to have that kind of service, but at least documenting in a central place everything where everything is would be one key thing. Am I running out of the subject? But I would definitely want to set up those things that are make it more common stuff for constituencies rather than having everything done separately. Okay, enough for now.
Okay, thanks, Stefania. So then the next question is about the outreach plan. So the outreach is one of the chair tasks. So what do you think, what you have here, maybe as a plan? And this time we will start with Tapani. Tapani, can you hear me?
You're starting with me again. Oh, hello? I lost you for a moment. I'm sorry, technical problem. But you're asking me about the outreach plan, yeah.
Yes,
Stephanie. Something I would like to do, an outreach in general, would be to do that on the stakeholder group level. We have seen something that at least appears to be, as it were, competition between constituencies of getting members, which is kind of silly. So some kind of cross-constituency set up there would be nice to actually attract members to the stakeholder group and see that then you can pick which constituency suits you more and within, rather than having it come from let's fight over who gets whom. And having a new website for NCSG, because we don't have one of our own, and the site or page we have in ICANN community page is not exactly, shall we say, a good advertisement for the stakeholder group. So I would like to set things that when somebody Googles NCSG, they wound up somewhere in the national chimney sweepers guild or something like that, which is not exactly what we'd like. And of course, I would also like to activate people within different regions to do that kind of outreach work, again hoping it would happen more in the collaborative fashion within the stakeholder group rather than just again doing it on the constituency level, because that kind of competition only makes things worse. Okay.
Thanks, Stefan. Now it's James to respond to the question.
Brilliant. Thanks, Rafik. So on outreach, I think my approach would be actually quite simple. I think there's a general agreement among NCSG members that we would like to see more geographic diversity in the work of the SG. We, from my interpretation of that is we want to see more people writing comments for NCSG. We want to see more people participating in working groups on behalf of NCSG. We want to have... Basically, NCSG is an incredibly diverse group if you actually look at our membership. But I think there is a valid argument that we don't reflect that in the people that are participating in working groups or on mailing lists. And I think that's something that we should work on. And I would approach that in a relatively simple manner. I would look to sit down with the geographic representatives from NCSG, from NCUC, and from MPOC to formulate outreach activities within their own regions. So I'm not an expert in outreach in Africa. That's not my job. But we do have regional experts that we should be leveraging, and we should be giving them the tools and the ability to do outreach in their own area, to activate their own local members and bring those into the work of the NCSG. And by, I think by enabling those representatives from the various regions around the world, we can then show the diversity that NCSG has, not just in our membership list, but also in our work.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. Okay. The next question is about travel funding. I would think it's quite a tricky one, but so what do you think about and so let's start this time with James.
Yes, so travel funding. It's probably one of the biggest questions. We are a group of non-commercial volunteers, so how do we actually get people out to meetings? At the moment, we get a set of travel slots from ICANN for each meeting, and each of the constituencies also has the option of self-funding through donations. So the way I would approach this is, in order for NCSG to be able to speak with the strongest voice that it requires and to be able to sit within the policy-making body of the GNSO at an equal level to those that are being paid for, for example, in the registrars, you know, their companies are paying them to go. And I think it's important that it's recognized within ICANN itself that it is an unfair advantage for those who are being paid to participate. So the way I would go about it is I would like to sit down and have a discussion with ICANN staff. I've already had discussions with Jean-Jacques Sahel, who's one of the outreach coordinators. We spoke in Paris about this issue, and I think that if we can put together a strong argument for why we need to bring additional people to ICANN meetings, or whether, you know, increased ways of doing remote participation is a viable way of doing it, I think if we can sit down and have a fact-based conversation with ICANN staff, we may be able to bring some closure on the current issues that we have around ensuring that our members are represented at ICANN meetings in person in the same way that we're representing ourselves in the remote sessions and in the working groups.
Hey, thanks, James. Stefani?
Yeah, definitely, I agree that travel funding is a major issue. The one key argument about this I think we should make is that diversity is highlighted in many points, but not so much is actually being done about it. If we are going to have diversity representation, we really need to get representatives of all regions to all meetings. That's the one line I would try to use with the ICANN staff to get more funding for that purpose. Another issue of the case that we might try to get funding on our own, I would like to get independent funds for NCSG, apply grants, or maybe even try crowdsourcing so that we could afford to send people in with NCSG money.
Okay, thanks, Tatani. The next question, which is the strategy about newcomer and new members, and maybe this time we can have answer from councillor, because they have also to work with members and the chairs. So let's start with the councillor this time. I had to give them some time to speak. Let's start with Hama.
All right, thanks, Rafiq, this summer. This is also, similar travel support, I guess this is also an issue that has been, something we've been trying to work on for a number of years. We did have a so-called in-reach proposal on how to get people who are already members, whether recent or old ones, sort of get them more engaged and more involved with the work of the I believe this was the NCUC at the time, and a lot of thoughts were sort of put into that into a document that we had worked on, but as in many other things, very little work has actually been done on this. And I think one of the challenges of bringing newcomers in and sort of helping them become more engaged in the work we do is that the folks who are actually doing the work and who know about it and who have the ability to instruct newcomers actually have very little time to do that because they're doing so much of the work. And this is sort of like a problem we haven't really mastered getting or solving at all. But it is something that I would really like to help with. I mean, speaking for myself, I think it's really important to do this. I think I mentioned this as far back as the San Francisco meeting back in 2011, when I said if people who know what is going on, if they don't help other people catch up and get involved in the work, then they will always just continue to drown in the massive volume of work they have to commit to. But again, speaking for myself, I would love to help people catch up with what the current work is. And this goes for anyone from any region. It makes no difference to me who the person is. As long as they want to become involved, I am more than willing to help. But I have to be honest when I say this. I would not be willing to help with building the capacities of new members or newcomers or even old members that want to become more involved if I am not sure that they themselves are willing to commit to helping the NCSG with the time that I provide to build their capacities. So for me, I would think a show of sincerity from new members who really want to get involved is to really just dive into the deep end and get involved in a working group. And if you're on a working group, you will find me or someone else on the working group who is really willing to help and who's grateful that a new member is becoming involved and willing to put in some work and some time. I say this because I think out of experience that worked well with me. When I joined my first working group, I got a lot of support from members like Avery, like Kathy, like Wendy, and then it really did help me catch up to things that I did not know anything about at the time when I joined my first working group. And so although this is not a very structured model, I think it is the only one we can actually work on right now until we do have a more coherent plan and dedicated personnel who are really willing to help with this. But in terms of answering Pascal's question right now, in terms of newcomers and new members, please just join a working group. Get involved in any of the work that we're doing, even internal work in the stakeholder group. I remember my first actual job working, doing something for NCSG, was working on an application to create a new constituency within the NCSG. So this wasn't even really GNSO stuff. It was just stuff internal to the stakeholder group. But once you do start getting involved, I promise you will find myself and others who are willing to help. And, yeah, I guess that's it for me for now. Thanks.
Thanks, Thomas. Let's go now with Marilia and to answer the question. Marilia?
Hi.
Okay.
Thank you, Rafiq. This is Marilia speaking. Well, speaking after Amr, I can testify to the fact
that to a meeting.
People that has helped me in the GNSO and always have been available to
did
answer
you want
questions
to say?
That I had. So sorry, I hear other people speaking on the line. Maybe you can mute your mic.
Okay, yes, Marilia, someone is speaking. Please, if you are not speaking, please mute yourself. Marilia, can you speak more louder?
Yes, sorry about that, Rafiq. Well, coming back to to Pascal's question, I think that I have touched upon that a little bit on my first time speaking. I think that one very important avenue for us to attract new people is the fellowship program and the Next Gen program. I think that people that get attracted to ICON, they usually have interest already on the organization. It's not very obvious to become involved in ICON. So usually they have some background, they have some information. And if they are properly approached and guided, I think that we could direct them to be involved in real policy work, in a working group. Of course, they are a little bit afraid to start because they don't understand things enough to be involved. That is why I think that maybe one of the things we could do, especially with people that come through the fellowship program, is to start kind of a coaching effort with them, a one-on-one thing, to identify if someone, for instance, has an interest on privacy, why don't we make sure that Stephanie is the reference to that, for instance, and this person can go to Stephanie and ask questions and be involved. I don't know how much this would overload people, but I think that using these points of reference helps people who are coming to ICON to understand who they can speak to when they have these sorts of questions. Of course, if we have experienced people that can answer about virtually anything that is going on in ICON that has been in the organization forever. So could these people be kind of focal points or hubs that we can kind of make the fellows that are coming to the program reach out to? I think that this is one important thing. So my first point is these programs that are already in place in ICON to tackle them more systematically and to direct potential newcomers that have already some knowledge to be involved in the working group. The second thing is a regional approach, and in that I agree with what has been mentioned by James before. I think that we come from different regions. We try to strike a general balance in our SG in the GNSO, and there is a reason for that. So I believe that each region has its challenges when it comes to the CNS industry, when it comes to non-commercial interests. So, for instance, when we organize this kind of outreach events at NCC, for instance, I feel that I can tailor the message in a way that will resonate more with the Latin American community. That's what we did, for instance, in DA. We tried to reach out to organizations that were from the region for them to give an input with what are the issues that would be more interesting to them and what are the issues, how we could present this information in a way that could be kind of attractive to them. So I think that one part of what we do in the council should be to try to translate the policies that are being discussed and to choose the ones that would resonate with your own region and try to dissect that and to explain what is going on. I have been trying to do that, particularly with the Latin American region in list of discussions during the outreach event, and I think that this is a good way forward because you can tailor the message to the people that we want to achieve. And I think that's basically the 2 points that I would tackle right now. Of course, I agree with Amr. I think that we need a more systematic planning of outreach, but I think that this is something that each of us could do kind of starting now. Thank you.
So thanks, Marilia. Now let's move back to our candidate for chair position. And okay, this time let's start with James.
Hi, thanks, Rafik. So after hearing Amr's response, I'm very tempted to say I'll delegate newcomer responsibility to Amr because he had a fantastic answer. So I would literally echo most of what Amr said. I think we need to make newcomers, I won't say more welcome, because as a relative newcomer, I think I was made very, very welcome. But I think we need to enable our newcomers to get up to speed very quickly. And I think we need to encourage newcomers to get involved in working groups and get involved in writing comments, even though they may feel that they're not up to speed on issues or they may feel that they don't know enough. So I think that we need to work on something similar to what Marilia said, possibly a buddy system where we match up a veteran member with a newcomer and they can guide them through the complexity of the GNSO system. Or another issue, or another possibility that we could do would be something along the lines of the beginner's manual to NCSG within the GNSO and within ICANN, and have a simple series of steps, or even possibly we could look at doing a video for newcomers to be able to say, okay, here's how you get involved in your first working group. Here's how NCSG submits comments to the various issues that are going on. Here is how our NCSG governance works internally, and here's the, you know, internal program teams and internal project teams that we can work, you can work on before you can, you go out and get involved in, for example, a PDP or an implementation group. So there's a number of different ways, I think, where we can go along, and when we get our newcomers, we can enable them to get involved in the work of NCSG and not just become members.
Hey, thanks, James. Tapani?
Thank you, Rafik. I'm in a difficult position that most of the good ideas I had in mind have already been mentioned. I note that it's really perhaps the highest step is to get into your first working group or writing your first comment or something. So picking up a newcomer personally, ideally it might be even the chair to have a personal communication with each new member. We have rather few members, but it might actually be better, at least considering chair's workload, to have regional team members dedicated to welcoming new members from their region. Also, easy thing to do would be a dedicated some kind of chat, whether Skype channel or even mailing list or whatever, for new members. Their senior volunteers would be answering questions. We actually did this kind of thing for NCUC in Skype when I joined the EC, and it worked fairly well. And it also might be nice to have such things separately for each regions, so that could use your own language, for example, have a Spanish language and Brazilian and Portuguese and whatever would be more useful, easier to ask questions in your own language.
Thanks, Stefan. Okay, the next question is really for GNSO counselor, and he's saying that GNSO is moving to new territory after the era transition. So what do you feel are the areas you would focus within GNSO to further the cause of NCSG, like privacy, human rights, and so on? Okay, so let's start now with Marilia.
Thanks, Rafik. This is a good question, because one of the feelings that I had in this first year of the GNSO is that the discussions as a whole in the community, and a lot of the bandwidth that we had has been invested and in a way diverted into important discussions of IANA transition and accountability. Of course, this is very important, and it's justifiable that we all became involved and that community was involved in these discussions. But in a way, I feel that topics that were in the agenda of the GNSO have slowed down this year. And I believe that with the progress that has been made in both areas, both on the transition and also on accountability, even though we will still have issues to discuss in the next cycle, I believe that now we can expect that the agenda that is kind of core business of the GNSO will kind of gain speed again. And I think that, as I mentioned in my initial statement, I think that two areas that we need to be dedicated is, of course, the issue of human rights, both on a procedural level in terms of trying to understand what are the specific points of pressure in which we can introduce assessments about human rights impacts of the policies that we are discussing at the GNSO, and this will take some work. And, of course, there are substantive issues that are related to human rights that are already in the agenda, and one of them that is very high is, of course, the issues related to privacy, to next generation registration directory services, and privacy and proxy, and I believe that we need to be still focused on that. And another area that I think GNSO, at least the councillors that represent non-commercial interests, should become involved is, I believe that now it's time that the next round of new GTLDs tends to gain speed again and move forward. So my screen has become blank. I don't know if you can hear me still, but I will keep on talking anyway. But there is a tendency that when we finish the assessment of previous round of 2012 round, that the next round is going to gain speed. And, of course, this is something that we need to be involved to make sure that non-commercial interests are taken into account into the discussion. And in my case, developmental concerns are one kind of an angle that I believe is very important that we explore that did not receive that much due attention on previous rounds. And I think that we need to have a concerted effort to make sure that this message that development concerns are important reach as high as the board, and that we can really have a next round that is more that has a more kind of equal playing field for different players in different regions. So I believe this would be issues that we would be looking at as priorities on months to come. Thanks. I hope you could hear me. My screen.
Okay, thanks, Marilia. We will go with Amr, and we will try to figure out later about the rest of the question. Okay, yes, Amr, please go ahead.
All right, thanks. It's Amr again. I would like to maybe divide my answer to this question into two, because on one hand, the question sort of directs us to what our vision of what will be important in GNSO now that the IANA stewardship transition and accountability work is coming to a close. So on one hand, yes, there are some significant changes that will happen in the GNSO as a result of this. On the other hand, the GNSO has continued to work. I mean, the GNSO Council hasn't stopped doing its work because of these two cross-community efforts. But as Marilia has mentioned, we do have a few policy development processes that are starting in the GNSO that will be extremely important, and they will probably take at least a couple, if not more, years to resolve. One she mentioned was the PDP regarding the upcoming yet another new round of GTLD applications, so that's going to be huge, and the NTSG will have to focus on that And the other is the Post-Expert Working Group, the PDP, which is the PDP on the next generation GTLD registration directory services. So again, that's another one. But I would like to differentiate the role of the GNSO counselor in terms of this and the role of an NCSG member who is participating in working group. Because the NCSG, a GNSO counselor from the NCSG doesn't necessarily need to know the details of what is happening with each one of those PDPs. They do need to be briefed by members who are participating, and it is up to every GNSO counselor to make sure they are fully briefed from the members who are working on these various PDP working groups. The reason why the GNSO needs, the council needs to be aware of these things is because the council needs to know that that the GNSO council is managing the process appropriately. And this is as far as I can see, this is the real function of the GNSO council, to make sure that these processes are managed appropriately in order for NCSG members to be able to participate to the full in terms of what sort of participation we are afforded, whether this is our representation in the working group or whether it is the stakeholder group's input to any of the work a PDP working group is producing. So that's one thing. And I feel that this is, although we are approaching the beginning of some very important work, I do believe over the past couple of years, the GNSO has continued to work, and the GNSO, and a lot of very important work has come out of the GNSO over the past 2 years. But then, again, there are some very significant issues regarding the IANA Stewardship Transition and the Cross-Community Working Group on ICANN's accountability that will have an impact on the GNSO. For one thing, I think as a chartering organization, the GNSO needs to be able to really keep an eye on how the accountability measures that are proposed by the Cross-Community Working Group and will hopefully be adopted by the ICANN board, how these are going to be implemented. So far, we still have very little insight on how this is going to be done, how there is going to be community involvement in the implementation efforts, or I don't want to say oversight, so I chose the word involvement, but I do believe that the community needs to be informed somehow and needs to have some measure or some measure of ability to address implementation efforts if they are not being done with the intent they were meant to when the Cross-Community Working Group provides its recommendations. So that's one thing that is very important to keep in mind for a GNSO counselor who is about to start another term now. Another issue regarding this as well is some of the roles that the GNSO will have within the context of the broader community, and maybe some of the roles the GNSO will have to play because of some of these new accountability measures. So we've been hearing a lot about this new single member model that is coming out of the Accountability Cross-Community Working Group. The GNSO will have a role in how this model works, and I do believe that counselors need to be very, very familiar with how this is done, because the nuances of how this would operationally have to work, because this is an important role, and although there may be no need for a counselor to actually do anything in that regard over the next 2 years, it may be a possibility, and we do need to be on top of it. And I guess we need to be on top of the proposals in general, because I believe the GNSO Council still needs to approve some of the work that is coming out of that cross-community work group. So I hope that answered your question, James. Thanks.
Okay. Still have some question to go through. And now it's more a question for the chair. So this is from Bill. And it's about the relation between the stakeholder group and constituency. Okay, so let's go with Tapani.
Okay, thank you.
Excuse me. Can I actually ask my question?
Bill, I think we asked it, so just they can respond. I mean, or you need to elaborate?
I have not asked my question. Am I allowed to speak? That's not my question. That was the only way I could get in queue. Are you going to allow me to ask my question?
Yeah, please, concise. Be concise, please. Yeah.
Thank you. I was rather struck by something that Tapani said about supposed competition for members, which I have never seen or experienced, which led, to some my thought about a broader question about the relationship between the stakeholder groups and the constituencies, and that is the massive confusion that consistently occurs because of the completely broken model that we operate under. In the CSG, the role of the stakeholder group is basically as a sort of artifice for aggregating votes and things like that. But we have this weird kind of situation where the boundary lines between stakeholder group and constituency get confused. Because of the way we have set it up, the whole model is like that. And so, for example, when you talk about outreach work, in-reach work, fundraising, policy work, building a new website, all these things, these are things that it strikes me as rather strange to have effectively the same people doing the same work in two completely parallel spaces that seem to be competing with each other. And it confuses everybody that we have to try to explain our configuration to. So every time we go to a fellows meeting and have to explain what gets done in the stakeholder group, what gets done in the constituency group, the constituency level, and so on, they get very confused. And so when I listen, I'm just kind of wondering, how do you two see the boundary line between what is appropriately done within the stakeholder group and what is appropriately done within the constituency? And should there be the same activities being performed in both by the same people with two different hats on, implying that there's some sort of separation there? Thank you.
Okay, Bill. It could be written anyway, and that would be correct. No big problem. Tapani, please go ahead.
Hey, thank you, Bill. That was a very good introduction to the whole issue here, that we have a rather difficult situation for historical reasons that the stakeholder group constituency division doesn't really work for non-commercials here. We do not have any good cooperation. We have some rather strong distrust between NPOC and NCUC. And that's something I would like to heal one way or the other, trying to build trust there. But how things should actually be organized there, I can see the possibility that the split gets so bad that the whole stakeholder groups falls apart, actually, and we have just two constituencies that barely talk to each other. But I don't think that would be an ideal outcome. Whether we should strive to make it, like you said, the commercials do, that we have very lightweight aggregator stakeholder group, or whether we should actually work on the stakeholder group level. It's not entirely trivial, but I think I would tend towards more work together to avoid infighting when we actually have agreement on any number of many issues. We have common goals, and it doesn't make sense to fight over, well, if not members, then for travel slots or whatever else that we have. Really clearly do not trust each other between NPOC and NCUC, and at least there is some historical distrust which doesn't work. So I would definitely try to build more cooperation, and that one way to do that is just to do more work in the stakeholder group level, whether that means any kind of formal changes in the system. Well, nothing like that's going to happen within a year anyway. When I was in the NCUC, well, we had trouble figuring out the demarcation line, what's stakeholder group and whatever, but really start the picky beginning, start working together. And when, if we can do that, once we can do that, I think we must be able to do that, then we can are better able to differentiate tasks on the stakeholder group and constituency level.
Hey, thanks, Stefan. James?
Sorry, I was muted. I think one of my first things on this, I suppose at the higher level issue, is that I'd like to sit down in probably Marrakesh with the ex-coms of both the NCUC and MPOC and have everybody in open and frank manner what they believe the issues are with NCSG and our the way that we work and the way that the construct is kind of evolving at the moment. And once we have all of those out in the open, I think we can then try and somehow look to implement a plan where we can improve and work on where the relationship is broken down between NCUC and MPOC within the SG level. Personally, I feel that we're probably stronger when we speak with a single voice, and I believe for this reason that I would prefer to keep working at NCSG level. I'm open to arguments for and against that. But at a basic level, I think the relationship needs to be built back up between the two constituencies. We're, at the end of the day, it's an important thing that although we may differ in our approach to manner to policy and, you know, we approach things in different manners, at the end of the day, we're all here within NCSG for a common purpose. And I think it's very important that historically we may have had issues, but we shouldn't allow that to drive a wedge between us on critical issues where we should be speaking together, because I believe it weakens both of our constituencies. And I think that relationship building is an important process. I think it's a process that's going to take time, and I think that it's not going to be fixed overnight by one chair, but I think that hopefully I could start off a process of some reconciliation between the SG, the C, and the two Cs.
Okay, thanks. So we are going now, it's about 80 minutes in this call. Maybe we can have more 20 minutes. And we still have questions, so I guess maybe we need to be more concise here, guys. And the next question is for Councillor. And it's a question, what's the area of your expertise? Let's start with Zamer.
All right, thanks. I'm the summer. Well, when I first began doing work in GNSO, I was more interested in the policies regarding who is, and I've continued to follow and participate on who is projects. So I would say that is a bit of an expertise as far as I'm concerned, but that is not to say that there are others in NCSG who have far more expertise on these issues and have been working on them for a number of years prior to my even knowing what ICANN ever was. My other area of expertise, I think, would really be procedural issues, and I think this is important for all councillors. But I do have a bit of an area of expertise on this just only because of the nature of some of the work I've done in the GNSO on the Standing Committee of Improvements and Implementations and the Policy and Implementation Working Group. So I'm very familiar with how the GNSO is supposed to work, the GNSO, the PDP manual, the operating procedures, the working group guidelines, and how those fit together in the bylaws, the ICANN bylaws where the GNSO is involved. And I do believe this is extremely important because this is, in my opinion, the primary job of the GNSO is to make sure the GNSO Council is to make sure that the GNSO can do its work, and that it can, when necessary, fend off other parts of the community like the ICANN board or the GAC when they're trying to get policies passed. that should be going through the GNSO. It's very important for GNSO counselors to know how these policies are supposed to be developed and how the work is supposed to be done to allow for the great amount of input and dialogue that the GNSO process offers. Those I think I would list as my two top areas. I'm sure I could come up with more if I had more time to discuss it. Thanks.
Thanks, Marilia.
Thanks, Rafik. Well, my own academic background is law and international relations. In law, I have been working with internet governance and human rights. Since I joined ICANN more closely, I have been trying to follow internet governance-related discussions. It was a moment in which ICANN was participating more actively in internet governance with AfterNet Mundial, and I have been part of the CCWG on internet governance. On the law side, as I mentioned before, one of the things that attracted me to participate in ICANN was exactly the point of domain name dispute resolution, and I tried to join the discussions on the IGO, INGO, access to creative rights protection. I did join the working group as an observer, but the discussion was kind of fading out to the final report. So in spite I was there with David, there was not much for us to intervene on that particular moment. And my interest on human rights, as I mentioned before, has led me to be part of the CWP, the draft chapter, and I think that this year it could be a moment in which we will discuss at the GNSO the procedural issues for us to assess how we can make sure that human rights are part of the evaluation process when we are discussing and kickstarting on PDP, where exactly are we going to feed that into our policy development process. So this particular area of procedural aspects is something that I am familiar because of discussions that are taking place in the CCWP about the different options, and I think that I can contribute to that at the GNSO. I have been also following closely the discussion group on the GTLD, new GTLD subsequent procedures, and I think that this is one of the topics that I will be following closely as well in the future.
Thanks. We can try to extend the call, but I'm not sure about the availability of everyone here. So, I mean, I know it's hard, but please try to be concise when you try to respond. I mean, it's not easy, but let's try. The next question from Frazen, about if the GNSO counselor have any program to meet with the new members. So let's start with Marilia and then Amber.
Thanks, Rafik. To my knowledge, there is not a specific moment in which counselors meet newcomers. What there is on the agenda of the fellowship program is the moment in which the leaders, the chairs of different constituencies and stakeholder groups come to the fellows about what is the role of the SC, what is the role of the constituencies, how they are organized, what are the priority issues for them. This is focused more on the chairs. I think that this is a very good idea for newcomers to be more in contact with people who are at the GNSO that may stimulate them to become part of working groups, for instance, or to make them more interested on the policy development process. So this is something that a suggestion that we can definitely explore. But for now, I think that maybe an important thing is to bring them to the NCSG open session. I think that this is a moment that they can not only meet the counselors, but also have an overview of the policies that are under discussion in the general at the moment, so maybe that's a good way to get them acquainted with what we do. Thanks.
Okay, Hama?
Yeah, thanks. I believe Marilia answered this question accurately. The question is really asking for a yes or no answer, and the answer is no. There is no GNSO counselor. There's no program for GNSO counselors to meet with new NTSG members. It may be a good idea to have that. We could maybe set up a sort of a quarterly call, for example, where GNSO counselors get to speak with new members who are interested in becoming involved in GNSO work. But I would also, I think there is a bit of work that perhaps could be mixed with what the GNSO counselors do and what the executive team does, because there actually are a lot of webinars and resources that are out there, and you just really have to find them and either join the webinars or read whatever is already on the web to really learn more about this. And I think with a little direction, those who want the information will be able to find it. But like I said, that does not conflict with an idea of GNSO counselors having a meeting with new members, or new or old, actually. And I think that this would be perfectly fine. We have our NCSG monthly policy calls. Those are sort of geared towards something else. We could have another call set up for another reason, such as any sort of interaction NCSG members, new or old, may want to wish to have with their elected counselors. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Hama. So I've already asked a similar question here. I'm trying to see if we can kind of maybe there are some common ground. But before that, let's go with the question from Stephanie, which is about the targeting webinar and if you think it's working. So maybe this is a question for the chairs here. Stephanie?
I have not found webinars very useful so far, but it may be due to my personal idiocies. But from what I hear, some people do find them useful, and it would be nice to have them for especially newcomers who find them effective introductions to the work.
Okay, thanks, Tapani. Jim?
Thanks, Rafiq. I'm broadly in agreement with Tapani on this one. I think that webinars are extremely useful for newcomers, and I think we should possibly step up our own version of the GNSO newcomers webinars for new members that are coming into NCSG to bring them up to speed on things. But with the complexity and the level of detail that much of the policy work that NCSG does, I think that trying to compress that into a 1 hour or 90-minute webinar can be very difficult, even for people. You know, we could have Stephanie talk about the EWG and privacy. You know, she's an international expert, but trying to compress that into 90 minutes can be very difficult. I think possibly, for example, working sessions at meetings could be a good way to do that. Or, again, going back to the idea of a mentorship for newcomers to bring them up to speed after they've had their initial introductions. A group mentorship could even work around specific topic areas such as human rights or privacy, where we do have, you know, extreme experts in those areas within the NCSG. So maybe not webinars, but targeted education outreach. Yes.
Okay, thanks. Okay, the question, the Avery's question, we'll try to cover as much as possible. First, about delegation and you think that NCSD chair have the authority to delegate that? Gents?
So, in the chat I put down something. So, I think my wording of delegate was Avery's impetus for asking that. Possibly delegate was a slightly too strong a word. But I think that if I was elected chair, the executive committee, when they're elected, have a responsibility. And this is, it goes for all three levels. So it goes for the SG and the two constituencies as well. There is a responsibility for the executive committees of all of the groups to be willing to take on workload. So I don't believe that I can do everything perfectly. Not a chance. So where we do have experts, either on executive committees or within our membership, I would look to turn to them, those people, and ask them, would they be interested in taking on a task that at that point had been a chair's task. Now, it's important to note there's no delegation of responsibility, but sharing the workload, I think, is an important task for any leader. I don't believe that anybody can do everybody's work perfectly as one person. You know, we're not gods, we are but men. So I think that sharing the workload of the chair and possibly even activating things like a vice chair position or a co-chair position would be something that should be looked into going forward. I believe that the charter has the capacity for a vice chair, so maybe we should be looking into that for certain things where we have experts around and placing those people into vice chair positions so that they can share that workload effectively.
Thanks, Jim. Stefan?
Yeah, there's actually very little. I'm not just delegation. There is no really power to delegate authority, anything, decision-making power, except really by choosing a vice chair, because then I think it would be, or several vice chairs, and then sharing chair's tasks with vice chairs in selected areas should be within chair's power to do. I think it would be basically up to the chair to choose which task to delegate to vice chairs if the EC selects vice chairs. And I already proposed in my candidate statement that we should select vice chair or even several.
Okay. Thanks, Stefan. Okay, I think the next question is about the NCSD charter, and so there was never been an attempt to amend the charter. So, you think the process is too difficult? We'll start with you, Stefan, here.
Thank you, Rafik. Yes, the process is difficult, but not insurmountable, and there are lots of issues in the charter, but let's say I would like to get really into fixing the charter after the transition is complete. But at the moment, when we really don't know what's going to be in the ICANN bylaws soon, it's a bit bad timing to start work on that now, although I know that the NCUC is working on its charter or bylaws at the very moment to bring it in line with the NCSG charter. And actually that very process is one reason I must agree that the process is difficult, but I think it should be doable. But as I said, let's postpone it until we have know what the new ICANN bylaws look like.
Thanks, Stefan. James?
Thanks, Rafik. So I would approach this in possibly a slightly different way. So I suppose this ties into probably the next two questions from Avery as well. So if there's no objection, I can probably answer those while I'm answering this. So if you read the NCSG charter at the moment, it's functional but not elegant. It has issues. I believe that, so we can take, for example, we should have a finance committee, but we currently don't have one. So
we have a situation where we have a charter that's not necessarily reflective of our working procedures. So if there was interest among the membership, because it would be a huge effort, I would endeavour to perform a gap analysis against the current charter to see, in our working methods, what's not there and what needs to be modified. I don't believe that the time is now, given that the IANA transition is going on and we have a huge amount of other policy work coming up with who is and everything else. I don't believe the time is right, personally, at this very moment, to overhaul the charter entirely, given the amount of workload that would come along with that. I don't believe it will be a priority during my term. But we possibly should look at doing a gap analysis for the required changes or the required fixes that are needed within the NCSG charter to ensure that it's a working charter and it's something that's reflective of the actual working methods of the NCSG.
Thanks, James. Next question, and it still was a charter, but this is for everyone, I mean, for all candidates. If they they read the NCSG charter lately, and more particular for the council candidates, if they read also the operating procedures, I get this is about the Genus one. So, let's start about more about the process and procedure and ask the Genus councillor, Marilia.
Thanks, Rafik. Yes, the NCSG charter I have read when I started to become involved in ICANN and representing CCS in NCC and NCSG, even to understand the structure. But I confess it was a joint, so it was in 2013. Maybe it's time for me to get back to it. And the GNSO operating procedures, yes, I have read them too. Actually, I have browsed through them before I put my name forward to be at the GNSO to make sure that I understand what I was getting into exactly. And I have studied them and read carefully. And I even sat with Avri to ask questions about the number of votes to get issues approved. To me, this is a complicated point until this day. I need to wait for Glenn or to ask questions to understand if the issue got approved or not. To me, this is still is just something complicated. But yes, I've read both documents. But I didn't read after the last changes to the operational procedure that we approved during the GNSO fall. And I guess that I need to understand better how the discussions in accountability will impact our work at the GNSO and how this will impact the procedures. That is something that I need to look into and do my homework. Thanks.
Thanks. Amar?
Thanks, this is Amar. I have read the NCSG charter lately. I've read it many times. And if you've seen in the chat, I've actually made a mistake on something that I mixed up between the NCSG charter and the NCUC bylaws. The reason I mixed those up is because I do actually read both of them quite frequently. So I am aware of what's in there. I just on this occasion happened to mix something up between the two. But yes, I do read the NCSG charter every now and then. I keep referring back to it whenever I have a question. As far as the GNSO operating procedures, I read those all the times. So I'm very, very familiar with them. Like I said earlier, the operating procedures, the working group guidelines, and the PDP manual in its entirety, really. And one of the reasons, again, is just because I do so much work that involves those. But it is a good question, Avri, and it is something that should be expected of GNSO counselors. Yes, that's my answer. Thanks.
So, let's move now to the candidates for chair position. I think let's start with Tapani.
To put it briefly, yes, I have read the NCSG charter lately. I read it in January 1st, the last, very thoroughly when I was elected to the NCSG EC, and I have read it again several times, actually quite recently when I decided to run for the chair. And I have observed some things there that we are not been following, like having the financial committee, which it says we shall have and we don't. But should I move on to the next question, actually, since I asked about the financial committee to save time? If NCSG is to do anything that requires funds of its own, then it needs to have a financial committee, basically. That's its task, to manage the funds and apply for grants and everything. That's the task of the NCSG financial committee as defined in the charter. And I think we should have at least some funds of our own, if nothing else. There are some structures that really should be common to the stakeholder group level, instead of having the constituencies built in by themselves. The most obvious case being the member database, which as it stands, the NCSG member database does not serve the constituencies, but these have to mind their own.
Okay, thanks, Tapani. Okay. So let's, James. So maybe, yes, if you can do like Tapani and respond to the two questions. Yep,
happy to. So as I said in my previous answer to the Avery's first question, yep, definitely I've read the charter the minute that I was nominated for the chair's position. It's obviously an important thing to be well-versed in. I wouldn't consider myself an expert in it yet, but I would certainly endeavour to understand the history and the background before it in much more detail. And of interest, although I'm not a council candidate, I was actually reading the GLS operating procedures recently as well. I think that's an important part to be able to understand the ecosystem that you operate in. On the financial committee, so I think we've shown that fundraising is effective at the constituency level. And I don't believe that we should put NCSG in a position to be competing for funding, outside funding, that is, with its own constituencies. I don't believe that's an effective way to operate. So I would be in favour of reactivating the Finance Committee, not just because it's a charter requirement, but as part of my chairmanship, if I was elected, one of the things I would push for is for some independent funding to come from ICANN for issues that happen at an NCSG level. For example, as Tapani was saying, things like membership management. Now, I know that ICANN is already looking into membership management solutions for all of the SOs, ACs, and SGs. So it's for things like that where ICANN may be paying for it, but there is a financial interest from NCSG in what ICANN money is doing for NCSG. So I would see it as quite a lean committee. I wouldn't see it as a terribly operational committee, but I believe it's regardless of anything, as it's a charter requirement, it definitely should be reactivated, yes.
Thanks, Jeff. So I guess we can make it for the two last questions. The next one, so it's about the role of the chair in the leadership meetings that are held by the CAO. Sorry, guys, it's too late here. I'm starting to So what do you think about your role in such a leadership meeting? Let's start with James here.
So I certainly wouldn't be a quiet person on the calls. There's a lot of very strong people on the leadership calls, and I've listened to some of the recordings of yourself and Bill and a number of the other SG and constituency leaders. I think that
those calls are useful for informing us, but I would be very wary of them becoming a replacement for the bottom-up process. So I would definitely try and steer those calls, and I think they by and large have been, in the direction of being an informative conversation with leadership, as opposed to anything that could be construed to be trying to subvert the process. And I think that's been effective to date, and I'd like to continue that method of working with those calls. I would like to basically shout our own voice strong and loud to ICANN leadership, including the CEO. You know, we're going to have a person replacing Fadi. We don't know if that person's going to be an internal candidate who is well-versed in who we are and what we stand for, or if they're going to be a new candidate who may not know and may need to be educated in what we stand for as NCSG and what our positions on things are. And to make sure that the NCSG voice is heard as loudly as others in the fray, and that we're taken seriously as a genuine contributor to the policy development process.
Thanks, James. Stefan?
Thank you, Rafik. I think that the role of the chair in the leadership meeting would be primarily to channel what's information, what's going on in the stakeholder group, but also to do some kind of negotiation position, basically, that you have to be able to make the voice of the stakeholder group heard. I'm not quite sure what the question actually is about, but still the point is that make voice the stakeholder group heard and channel information both ways, try to find out what's going on in the minds of the other leaders present, because it's sometimes very nice to do that in a meeting event. Okay.
Oh, sorry, Tapan, I thought you ended it. Yeah, please go ahead. Okay. Sorry. So, next is, I think, the question for the general counselor, and it's about what are your accomplishment activities in the council that I think led you to run again, to run for more 2 years. So, let's start with Amr here.
Okay, thanks. well, in terms of my accomplishments or activities, I guess I would say that I've been fairly active on the council. I've been keeping track of all the different projects, even if I am not personally involved with them on a working group level, for example. But I've always made it a point to stay up to date on all the different GNSO projects. If there is something I don't understand or need more information on, I'm never too shy to ask, really. But I have done quite a bit of work for the GNSO Council, some on behalf of the NCSG, some more on behalf of the Council itself. I've been a Council liaison to several working groups. I was also a Council liaison to one implementation review team for the SIC, who is. I've also been very active on the GAC GNSO consultative group, which is a group of six GAC members and six GNSO council members trying to work on a process that will... I'm sorry, is that a beep for me to stop talking, or... I'll just keep going. Yes, it's a group working on a process to facilitate early engagement of the GAC in the GNSO policy development process try to sort of mitigate the conflicting advice the GAC provides once all the policy work is actually done. So I think that's a good project. I've been very active on that from the GNSO side. I think one of the things that I'm personally kind of pleased with myself about is ever since the expert working group finished its work, there have been kind of attempts to fast-track how the GNSO would adopt the expert working group's final report and recommendations. I would like to think that I gave ICANN staff a really hard time on that. We spent months and months debating it, at least over two ICANN meetings. And I think it's because I know so much about the GNSO procedures, I was able to sort of hold these arguments with policy staff. And I think in the end it worked out really well. I didn't do this alone, of course. I mean, I had help from other counselors from NCSG. It's one of the things that I'm really happy about because when the whole expert working group stuff started, and I think this was maybe around the time of the Beijing meeting, there was a lot of concern about how the work coming out of this ad hoc process would be reconciled with the GNSO's process. So I think it worked out fairly well. We got a new preliminary issues report, which is something that I had always believed we deserved, as opposed to one that was published, I think, about 2 years ago now. So that is something I would chalk up as an accomplishment on council. Apart from that, I don't know. I guess just put in a lot of day-to-day work with the GNSO council, and I hope it reflects well. Thanks.
Thanks, Omar. Aurelia?
Thanks, Rafiq. I think that to speak about accomplishments, the accomplishments usually happen inside the working group. In the GNSO, the role of the GNSO is more related to review the discussion of the working group. And given the fact that non-commercial interests are a minority, I think that the importance that of our presence there, besides reviewing the work that has been done and making sure that all the procedures have been properly followed in the working groups, is also to make a point, even if we are a dissenting voice from the majority advocating for non-commercial interests. So I think that our role as counselors has been to speak, to advocate for non-commercial interests, no matter what the odds are, no matter if we believe that we're going to win or lose a particular discussion or a particular voting or a particular debate. But it comes to being involved in working groups. I tried at first to look at those that I knew that I had some more background to participate. So the one that I joined as an observer was the IDO-INGO one. I've been discussing with David. I have been to the meeting, but there was not really much to do in that one in terms of they were already finalizing the work. The work was very well advanced. It was more a matter of following the discussion and making sure that nothing would go wrong or be very absurd, but there was not much substantive work to do on that one. And more recently, I have joined the discussions on the discussion group on the new DTLD subsequent procedures, trying to understand what is going on that one. And I believe that in the council, when the preliminary report was presented from the discussions of the discussion group, I think that I have been vocal because I have been gone through the report and the table that has been produced and try to point out the gaps of the table and of the assessment that was conducted, and more specifically the gaps related to the non-consideration of developmental concerns I raised in the council of the importance of going back to previous documents that have been extensively discussed but that have kind of being forgotten, such as the judge report, and try to make sure that these reflections that were important at the time, they resonate in future discussions about subsequent rounds of new GTLDs. So that was the point that I have made strongly in the council, I think, and of course trying to bring to the council as well, at least initially, the discussions that are happening in other parts of the organization or other groups that I am involved with, such as the discussions on human rights. I think what I feel about myself is that it took me some time to understand the points that I would like to intervene and be involved. I have a feeling that there are some working groups that have been going on for a long time, and in spite of the fact that I have tried to follow them, they are in a point of converging. Either they are finalized, such as the IGOI NGO in terms of producing a final report, or they are in a process of trying to close a discussion. And I think that there are some that are going to be created from now on that I believe will be strategic, and these are the ones that I plan to be involved more vocally from the start in terms of working group involvement and being there and participating. In terms of speaking in the council, I think that I am pretty much outspoken and I can speak in public and I'm able to make a point, and I think that because of the configuration of the council, this is something that is really important for non-commercial interests, for us not to be completely diluted because we are such a minority there. And I think that I'm able to do that. And I noticed a progression in terms of my participation and being vocal in the meetings that took place in the last one. I've been much more vocal in the council. I understand much more what is going on and I have been participating more. And I believe the next cycle, I would keep my priorities on the issues that I have mentioned on development and human rights, and also become involved in issues that are starting right now, such as the discussion on the assessment of the last round and next round of new GTLDs. That's it. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Marilia. Thanks, everyone. We should the end of this call, but before that, I would like to give opportunity to each candidate to speak for 30 seconds. I want really that you speak only for 30 seconds, just to say to people why they should vote for you. So please convince them, and maybe we can start with the candidates for chair, and maybe with Tapani here.
Okay, 30 seconds. So my main idea is to reduce the pressure, time pressures on volunteers by building tools and automation and organizing things as well as I can and increasing members to outreach. Basically trying to do what I did for EFFI years ago. Do things smoothly, smartly, effectively. Less than 30 seconds.
Okay. Thanks, Stefan. Jen?
Thanks, Rafik. So I'm new blood to NCSG, and I'm possibly an unusual candidate to run for chair. But I think if you do elect me, that I will work harder than anybody else in this position, and I hope that I can bring new perspective onto new issues and old issues alike, and that I can be a fair and neutral chair for all members of the NCSG, be they NCUC, POC, or individual members.
Okay, thank you. So let's move to General Councillor Combat, and starting with Aria.
Well, thanks for this. To me, it will be a great honor and pleasure to represent NCSG for the next term in the council. If you believe I'm fit for the position, I think that we will have a good regional gender balance in the council with the configuration change. And I believe that I could be a strong advocate for developmental concerns that are going to be very much needed now. And I believe that we need people focused on the new GTLD discussion, on the discussion of auctions, and trying to bring these diverse views that are not only from the developed world. And we would need to discuss human rights issues as well. And I am very much involved in the discussions that are taking place in the SPC, WP, and I think that I can bring this into the Council.
Thanks, Maria. Samer?
All right, thanks, Samer, again. Well, but before I tell you very quickly why I think you should vote for me, I think it's only fair to mention that whether you vote for me or not, it really ultimately won't matter, because since we have only three candidates running for three, which is, I find, extremely unfortunate. Regardless, the three candidates will make it to the GNSO Council spots allocated. But on the other hand, yes, I do think you should vote for me, and I hope that you will. I think I've done a fairly good job on the GNSO Council this past term. I think I'm relatively one of the more experienced councillors now, especially since Aubrey has elected to not run for a second term. I do admit that I don't think I've, I mean, I say I've, I think I've been a good counselor. I don't think I've been a perfect one. I have had, I mean, there is definitely room for improvement on my part. I've mentioned this briefly in my candidate statement, and if you do vote for me, I will work to be a better counselor than I had been in the past. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Amar. Okay, so just maybe to say something before we end this call. First, thanks for all your answer and trying to respond to the question, and also thanks for those who asked this question. It was engaging. It was also kind of important to understand the concerns one. What I can tell you to candidates, first, good luck for the election. It is still an election, and you have a strong competitor with the Nota of the above. I heard a lot of good idea, nice proposal, how we can improve things. And I mean, it's quite important. However, the challenge is how we can do them, regardless who will be elected, how we can implement them. And this needs the work of everyone. We elect people to position, to do some work, to facilitate, to represent us. Mm-hmm. But at the end, we need all the membership, everyone, to volunteer for work. So I really wish good luck to you guys. Whoever will be elected, he will need a lot of support. And that's really important to remember after this. We got a lot of ideas, a lot of nice proposals. I hope that we can implement even a small set of them. We tend to be optimistic, but I hope that we can reach what we are talking about. Okay, guys. Thanks again, and hopefully see you soon. And we will share all the recordings and transcripts in the mailing list. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, Jay. You may now stop the recording. Thank you very much. Bye.